Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Olympic Games in London that opened Friday and speak with Francis Wheen, the deputy editor of Britain's satirical magazine Private Eye, to get a sense of the unintended comedy of errors that has accompanied Mitt Romney's arrival in London. Before meeting the British Prime Minister, Mitt managed to offend him, prompting a rebuke from David Cameron, who, in a snide reference to Salt Lake City, snapped that putting on the Olympics in London is not the same as holding the Olympic Games in the middle of nowhere. And then we will speak with economist Justin Wolfers, a visiting professor at Princeton and professor in the Business and Public Policy Department at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and co-editor of the Brookings Papers on Economic Activity. We will discuss his article at Bloomberg, "The U.S. Economic Policy Debate is a Sham." Then finally, we will speak with author and conservationist William Dubuis, the author of A Great Aridness, Climate Change and the American Southwest. We will discuss the lethal combination of heat, droughts and insect plagues, windstorms and forest fires that will become the new norm in the American West. And joining us now from London is Francis Wheen, who is a journalist, broadcaster and writer. He is the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye, and he's written for a variety of publications and regularly appears on such BBC programs as The News Quiz. His books include the award-winning biography Karl Marx, A Life, Idiot Proof, A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed, The Golden Age of Paranoia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Francis Wheen.
Welcome to you, too.
And we have just exported to the United Kingdom on the eve of the London Olympics the Republican nominee for president, Mitt Romney, who apparently has already managed to put his foot in it. He apparently told an American broadcaster before meeting with the Prime Minister he was quite critical of the way the London Olympics are being handled. And a rather peeved Cameron soon rebuked Romney, saying, quoting, "We are holding an Olympics Games in one of the busiest, most active, bustling cities anywhere in the world. Of course, it's easier to if you hold an Olympic Games in the middle of nowhere," which I guess was a barb at Romney and Salt Lake City.
I think you can safely assume that, yeah. Well, it is amazing because our mayor in London, Boris Johnson, is a bit of a chump, as we might say over here. He's sort of character out of P.G. Woodhouse, who's always putting his foot in it and making a fool of himself and behaving like Bertie Wooster. But actually, Romney has achieved the rare feat by coming over here of making Boris look like Demosthenes. I mean, I've never seen anyone so clumsy and stupid and accident-prone. He got so many things wrong. He's only been here for a short while so far. But already he blurted out that he'd had a private briefing session with the head of MI6, you know, the guy who's called M in the James Bond films. And by and large, foreign opposition leaders or opposition candidates don't usually get that sort of thing. And you're certainly not meant to mention it if you do. It's, you know, a sort of code of secrecy about these things. And said he'd been briefed on Syria and 101 other things. So that embarrassed MI6. He then annoyed David Cameron by suggesting before he came on his NBC interview that it all looked a bit iffy, a bit disastrous in the making, and so then got his justified rebuke saying, well, all you've ever done is organise the Winter Olympics in the middle of nowhere. He had a meeting with the Labour Party leader, Ed Miliband, and called him Mr. Leader throughout, presumably because he'd forgotten his name, which is forgivable, but it did make it sound a bit like a trip to North Korea, you know, the great leader and the dear leader and Mr. Leader, the rather junior person. And actually, it feels a bit like North Korea at the moment in London, because Tony Blair, one of the last things he bequeathed us before he scarpered, was to pass an act in 2006, a law, called the Olympics and the Paralympics Act 2006, which gives incredible powers to the International Olympic Committee and orders the police to enforce them. So, for example, to protect the sponsors, you're not allowed, if you're not an official sponsor like Visa or Coca-Cola or McDonald's, to use, under this act, use words like Olympics and 2012 or Olympics and London, or even Olympics and summer in the same phrase. And there are bakers who've been putting up little round donuts in their window in the shape of the five Olympic rings because they thought it would make a nice window display in little villages. And they found the police raiding them and saying you're going to be prosecuted if you don't take that down at once. And it is, I mean, even little cakes, you know, if amateur bakers make a cake and decorate it with the Olympic symbol and put it up for sale at the village fete, they'll then get the police descending on them to protect the rights of the International Olympic Committee. And they've got lanes all over London in the main roads marked with the rings, which are now like Zill lanes in the old Soviet Union, where members of the Politburo can go, but nobody else can. And I was in London quite a lot last week, and I even drove in one of these lanes just before the rules came into force, just for the hell of it, just for the fun of driving in a Zill lane. But it is a bit creepy.
So is there any substance to the criticism that came from Romney about the London being ill-prepared and the security not being up to snuff, etc.?
Well, that's the slightly annoying thing, that he was actually right. I hate to say it, Mitt Romney, but he was right the first time and wrong the second time. Because I expect it'll pass off all right, but it has been a disaster, the run-up to it. The security was given over to a firm called G4S, which used to be called Group 4 and then merged with Securicorps, which had a reputation when it was called Group 4 for doing privatized work guarding prisoners and kept letting them escape by mistake. They were meant to be taking charge of all the security of the Olympics, and only about 2 weeks ago they had to own up to the government that they hadn't recruited nearly enough people and they'd sort of somehow forgotten to get round to it. So the British Army is now going to have to do it, and the police, because they made a hash of it. So Romney's quite right. I mean, it's been a fiasco. And actually, the fiascos continue. Only last night, even before the opening ceremony, there was a football game, a soccer game, between North Korea and somebody. And on the big screens at the start of the game, they showed the South Korean flag beside the members of the North Korean team. So the North Korean footballers all walked off in protest, and it took an hour to get them back on the pitch with lots of apologies and things. And I heard one of the spokespeople for the London Olympic Committee saying, it was human error, it won't happen again. And you thought, well, human error does happen again. That's what human error means. You can't predict or when it's going to strike. So I dare say there will be other cock-ups of that sort. So Romney's sort of broadly right, but it's just a bit rich coming from him. We don't like taking lectures from a man who wears magic underpants, frankly.
Well, you know, there's been quite a controversy here in the United States about the fact that the Olympic uniforms were manufactured in China under the brand of Ralph Lauren, and that has created a kind of patriotic backlash. But apparently Mitt Romney did even better when he was doing the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. He managed to have the Olympic uniforms manufactured in Burma.
Bless him. Occasionally one tries to console oneself by thinking, this man is so clumsy and so obviously all over the place that surely, to goodness, he can't be elected. But then you think of other people of that sort who have been elected in the past, and it's not quite so funny anymore. But yes, I think that's probably the case. And certainly oppressive regimes. Part of the problem, I suspect, is that the last Olympics 4 years ago were in Beijing. And, of course, the Chinese authorities could do whatever they liked. You know, they could move a million people out of the way or do whatever they wanted to achieve their ambitions and put on a great show. Whereas over here we're supposed to be a liberal democracy and we don't take so kindly to that sort of oppressiveness. And so, I mean, Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, and Sebastian Coe, the head of the London Olympic organisers, in the last 2 or 3 days have been going around saying, stop moaning, stop whinging, get behind the project. You think, well, actually, moaning and whinging and complaining, that's one of the very few things in which we lead the world, and they're telling us that we shouldn't do it. I mean, this is one of the few sports at which we would undoubtedly win a gold medal, and I think it's one of our saving graces that we're not that impressed by strutting totalitarian figures who come round bossing us about. But anyway, they're telling us we've got to get behind it and stop moaning. But luckily, I mean, of course, you know, I'm sure the opening ceremony on Friday will be all the word is that it's going to be rather good. And I'm sure, you know, the swimmers and the pole vaulters and the javelin throwers will all be terrifically good. But it's the rest of it, the backdrop to it, the awful authoritarian regime imposed on this country by the International Olympic Committee. I mean, in 2005, when we won the Games, and London won the Games, it was said that, you know, Britain has won the Olympics, and actually the Olympics won Britain. They have, you know, for the next 2 weeks, they will be actually running large parts of the country and have full powers of arrest.
Well, there's an assumption that the opening ceremonies will be, you know, majestic, and the punditry over here is chattering about how only the British put on such great pageantry, whether it's a coronation or a royal wedding or a funeral, they excel. So there's an expectation that this is going to be like, you know, Princess Di's wedding or something.
Well, I hope it's not pageantry, because although I suppose we do that sort of thing reasonably well, we've had hundreds of years to practice things like the coronation and the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. You know, that's quite easy. You just get the household cavalry out and they ride up and down the Mall in their fancy uniforms and golden carriages wafted down to Westminster Abbey or St. Paul's Cathedral or whatever. You know, we can do that sort of thing, but I think it'd be awful if it was like that. It'd be vainglorious, imperialistic, and generally nauseating to many people in this country. I think what we'd like to see, especially the more we're told to stop moaning, is some recognition in the opening ceremony that one of the few things we have left, having lost our empire and crashed our economy, is a sort of slightly grumpy sense of humour. And I would quite like there to be an element of that in it, a bit of mischief and a bit of humour, rather than just lots of people in fancy uniforms parading around.
Again, I'm speaking with Francis Wheen, who is in London. He's a journalist, broadcaster and writer, and the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye. He has written a number of books, including Idiot Proof, A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed, The Golden Age of Paranoia. And we're talking about the Olympic Games in London opening on Friday. And, of course, I mentioned at the beginning that we've exported Mitt Romney, the hapless candidate, who, by the way, may well be elected president of the United States. You know, the Republicans have made a very wise investment in ignorance in this country. And
they didn't have much choice, given what else was available in the primaries. You know, you sort of felt that, you know, would they have done any better with some of the other candidates who were storming through the primaries? And so probably they made the right choice in Mitt Romney, and he's just got to keep very quiet about Mormonism between now and November, and he's got to try and remember quite how right-wing or not very right-wing he is, according to which audience he's addressing, and what precisely he's said in the past, except, of course, he can't escape that because it all comes out, thanks to the wonders of YouTube and things like that. I mean, the moment he flip-flops, it's all out there. You know, never mind John Stewart. It's all over the internet.
Well, he's also got a slight problem with not wanting to release any tax returns because...
Oh, I know. Isn't that great? But partly because he's such a patriotic American that he feels obliged to put all his money somewhere else.
and apparently he's not going to release it. And so that obviously will be a water torture, drip, drip, drip. But again, I'm not sure that the people of this country, you know, they may well think that, we have this game show democracy. We can make a choice. Let's make a choice.
So are you now saying it's up to us, the Brits, to try and sabotage Romney before he comes back to America, make him completely unelectable by making him even more of a fool, catching him out?
From your lips to God's ears, I say. But I wanted to mention your export to us.
No, not Piers Morgan, I hope.
Exactly. How did you know? That's the very person I wanted to talk about, because
I thought it could only be Simon Cowell or Piers Morgan, and I put a small bet on Piers Morgan.
No, well, I must say, this anxious toady...
He's in London for the Olympics, so you're free of him for a week or so.
No, but he's just done an interview with Mitt and Ann Romney, and it is the most unctuous drivel, the most pathetic pandering that clearly this guy wants to be hired by the Romney team as the next press secretary.
Well, I know. Piers is very good at that. I mean, as John Reed said of the Russian Revolution, I have seen the future and it smirks. Actually, he didn't quite say that, but that's the case with Piers Morgan. Talk about making a little go a long way. I mean, I've known Piers since he was a junior reporter on the Sun newspaper in London, making a fool of himself, doing the showbiz column and the rock column. And he was only hard because the editor thought it'd be a joke having this posh, gormless character. He was called Piers Pugh Morgan in those days, had a double-barrel name, hanging out with all these rock stars. But Piers made a terrific job of it, did a deal with all the stars he interviewed, saying, look, if you will be photographed with me and pretend you're my friend, I will give you a fantastic write-up. And so day after day, there'd be peers with not just rock stars, film stars, you know, there'd be peers with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone at the opening of the Hard Rock Cafe saying, my mates, Sly and Arnie. Peers with, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen or whoever it might be. He then disgraced himself as editor of the Daily Mirror twice over and was eventually sacked in utter disgrace. And we thought, well, that's the end of Piers. And as so often happens with our discards, someone in America picked him up, unbelievably. It's very odd. I mean, the last editor of the News of the World is now a newspaper editor in New York. I don't know what's the matter with you.
Well, he seems to have dodged this bullet vis-a-vis the phone hacking, this embroiled News Corp.
Yes, well, Piers, it may yet happen that Piers has to come back and answer a few questions from Scotland Yard about all this, because there is now increasing investigation into what happened at the Mirror when he was editor, the police have said that they are worried about certain things. And Piers himself, I mean, he used to boast about it famously with Paul McCartney. One of Piers' party tricks was to say to people at dinner or in the bar, oh, I've heard Paul McCartney's messages that he left on Heather Mills' answering machine after they had a row and he was winning her back by singing, we can work it out. And at the time, Piers obviously thought this was a harmless little anecdote to tell in the pub. But now, with all the phone hacking stuff, it's rather come back to bite him.
So, Francis Wheen, just to go back to Mitt Romney, and, you know, I do hope you keep us posted on his next gaffes, which will surely come.
Well, we'll try and provoke a few, I hope.
That's even better.
I think that's the only service we can now do to our former colonies, is to try and save them from Mitt Romney.
Well, apparently one of his aides, before they left, told the Daily Telegraph that Mitt Romney, in a none-too-veiled reference to our African-American president, saying that unlike our president, Romney represents and values the Anglo-Saxon bonds.
Oh, yes, I heard that. Yeah. It wasn't really very coded, was it? Given that, well, actually, Mitt Romney is, I suppose, a little bit Anglo-Saxon on his mother's side. But even so, I mean, the way it was phrased, there could only be one interpretation of what he was trying to say. You don't really need a dog whistle for canines to understand that message, I think.
Well, our unctuous Piers in his interview on CNN said that, pointed out that Miles Romney, his great-grandfather, was more English than Piers was because he grew up in Ireland. So more of the grovelling.
Piers claimed he grew up in Ireland. That's completely untrue. Complete codswallop. He grew up in Sussex.
Right. Well,
it's not the first time Piers has had a slightly loose acquaintance with the truth, I'm afraid, but there we are.
I thank you for joining us. I imagine we'll all be watching on the openings, and I do hope...
Well, that'll all be quite good, I imagine. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure Usain Bolt will be, you know, very watchable, and all those people will be watchable. It's just, you should think yourself lucky you're not actually in London for it, because the chaos, I can't begin to tell you. I mean, on Monday I was getting a train out of London back to East Anglia, to Essex. And the first stop is Stratford, which is the HQ of the Olympics. It's where the stadium is, where the Olympic Village is, where everything else is. It's the Olympic station, as it were. And we crawled out of London towards Stratford, and eventually the voice came over and said, I'm very sorry for this today. All sorts of things have gone wrong at Stratford, the signals, the points, the this, that, and the other. A lot of trains have been cancelled altogether. And we spent about an hour creeping through at a snail's pace. And part of that time, we were sort of just outside Stratford Station, looking across through the windows at the Olympic Stadium, the ludicrous Anish Kapoor sculpture, all sorts of other stuff. And there we were, stranded in baking heat in this airless train carriage. And I was thinking, I do hope the likes of Mitt Romney are advised to take public transport. Then they'll rarely suffer.
Well, I hope the patrician learns how the plebeians live, but I think that's asking for too much from Mitt.
I'm very worried on your behalf now. If there's anything else we can do,
I'll let you know.
I do feel actually that I know because of the, you know, the long and distinguished tradition in America of separation of religion and state and all the rest of it, freedom of religion and freedom from religion, that it's sort of thought to be bad form to mention anyone's religion. But it does seem to me that the Mormon business, that at some point someone ought to bring it up. I mean, you know, how far does this go? You know, if Tom Cruise ran for president, would no one mention Scientology? It has to be vaguely relevant, doesn't it?
Well, it's that's one of the great amusements of American politics. The two most important things in our lives, politics and religion, are not suitable for public discussion. So,
well, anyway, he's achieved a great thing because David Cameron, who's a Conservative Prime Minister, and Boris Johnson, who's Conservative Mayor of London, and so you think natural allies of the Republican candidate, are both now completely fed up with him and rubbishing him and being very rude about him in a way. He's not really winning round the right beyond America much, as far as I can see.
Well, we see how he does in Poland and in Israel. And I thank you very much for joining us, Francis Wheen.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Francis Wheen, who is a journalist, broadcaster, and writer. He is the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye, and he's written for a variety of publications and regularly appears on such BBC's programs as The News Quiz. His books include the award-winning biography Karl Marx, A Life, Idiot Proof, A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed, The Golden Age of Paranoia. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with an economist about how the national debate about the economy is a sham.